It's really too bad.
Yes. My watch must be a little slow then.
Should bring that up at court.
I think I'll put that in the district. You'll have to have two tonight. Yes. Oh, well, I gotta drink the water out of the spout.
You were hearing.
Yes.
Yeah. And were you going to ask the question about whether there are prosperous countries?
No, not today. I'm interested. Is it prosperous? There's a lot of expert.
But this is a short article that my parents sent me once. Modern Maturity, but it's by the same author as this book, The Africans, in which he talks a little bit about a couple different countries comparing the.
How about Liberia? Where is it going?
Liberia? Back in 1981, 1982, 1983, and 1984, we in Ghana were looking up to Liberia very, very enviously because it was so much better off than Ghana. Well, in 1980, what year was that? I think in 82 or 83, there was a military coup there, and the present leader, Samuel Doe, apparently this has really brought things rapidly downhill. Yeah, and so we're thinking about, from Ghana, sending care packages to some of our friends in Liberia, because they're starting to talk about, you know, every point they, every corner they go, there's a police check, and police get hassled, and stores have nothing. The Liberian currency used to be the US dollar, actually. And that was a medium of exchange in Liberia. But now, apparently, things have gotten so bad in Liberia that you can't get the US dollars. And you can only now get the Liberian minted money, which isn't buying as much. But just a few years ago, the US dollar was the currency for Liberia. There's a lot of dissatisfaction right now in Liberia. Teachers not getting paid, going on strike. Southern Africa, I'm sure you can get books on Eastern Africa.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you can get books on Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Because that's also, again, a very, very unique situation.
Yeah. Well, even if there were one good book on each of the three areas, it could be a photographical section.
I haven't really looked into the other areas a whole lot.
Is there a Deguchi or something? Yeah. I heard he has a book on Christianity, church in Southern Africa. But I think it's
well, especially when And the projections are that by the year 2000, the majority and the weight of Christians in the world are going to be found in Africa rather than in Europe and America.
Well, Latin America is a huge other area. I mean, if you take those areas.
Yeah. Okay, how many have you heard of the Mesaba Disco Cristo Church? Actually, I picked up that name just as one of the independent churches in West Africa because it's the one that always attracts the most interest. You know, do they disco at this church or whatever? It's a little bit disappointing because the disco isn't referring to disco, even though after visiting one of these churches with the wife of a Scottish Presbyterian chaplain in one of the mainline churches in Accra, she said, well, it was just like going to a nightclub after visiting one of the churches because of all the singing and dancing during the three-hour service. The disco really doesn't have anything to do with that. It's in the local language. Mesaba is the name of a place. Disco is the... Wait, no. Mesaba is the word for cross. Disco is the word for army. And so it's the Army of the Cross of Christ Church. Mesaba Disco Cristo Church. There's another church that you may have heard of also. Church of the Lord, Aladura. Any of you heard of that one? Okay, it's a church that claims to have 6 million members.
Oh, come on.
Okay. You haven't heard of it. I think there's a lot going on in Africa that I think pretty soon will be, you could say, erupting on the world scene, simply because of the impact of numbers, if nothing else. The Mesaba Disco Cristo Church, I don't know the number of members that it actually has, but I think estimates are between 1.5 to 2 million members for that particular church. I have a little bit of a history written by one of its members that I'll be reading to you. These are some of the larger of the independent churches in West Africa. There are a lot of smaller ones too. There are estimates that in West Africa alone, there are over 5,000 different independent churches, including such large churches as these, as well as real small ones which would have only one congregation, maybe about 30 or 40 members. So there's a real variety in these churches.
Are you speaking of that in the million as being one congregation?
Not one congregation, but the different...
Denominational.
Oh.
It would be one denomination, you could say.
I see.
Yeah. And the Church of the Lord Aladura, you couldn't get... Yeah, 6 million would be like 60% of the country of Ghana.
Keep books there.
Yeah, no. right.
So it's a denomination.
Yeah, so it'd be a denomination with branches throughout West Africa, largely. You may be interested that Church of the Lord Aladura is a member of the World Council of Churches and has branches also in London and New York. The Mesaba Disco Cristo Church also has a branch in New York City. So if you ever get there, you may want to visit the Mesaba Disco Cristo Church.
What denominations do they...
They're the Mesaba Disco Cristo is the denomination, or the Church of the Lord Aladura is the denomination. I hope that in the next hour you'll get a little bit of an idea of where they're coming from, what they're like. And that's the intention of my session today. First, I'd like to ask, is anybody here who hasn't been to either of the two sessions I did before? Okay, several of you. Okay, so maybe I'd better say one or two things that might be repetitious to the others who have been here. My wife and I have been living in Ghana, West Africa, which is on the, what they call the west coast of Africa, right here. We're living in the capital city, Accra. We're missionaries with the Lutheran Church in America, and working with these churches that I'm going to be talking about this afternoon. They're known in the United States and Europe as African independent churches. In West Africa, they call themselves spiritual churches. We'll be talking a little bit about that name this afternoon. The previous times, I tried to give you a little bit of flavor of first the culture, a few of the things of the culture of your country, and yesterday, probably why there aren't so many repeats today, I gave a long history of the area. And I think that today we'll probably be having more question and answer discussion. There is a proverb in the Akan language, Chui, which, as I described yesterday, comes from the central part of Ghana, but it's one of the predominant tribes. It would be the Ashanti tribe, that says, however big a stranger's eyes, he cannot see enough with them. And then another one says, a stranger is like a child. Well, I haven't been in Ghana for very long, but I've realized that a lot of the experts on Africa are people who have come and lived there. For example, one of the best-known books on the African independent churches that I've seen being sold a lot, relating to a church I'm quite familiar with now, was written by somebody who had come to Ghana, lived 2 months with the leader of one of the churches, and now he's one of the experts on Africa. When I got there, I started to become uncomfortable when a lot of the first questions that members of these churches and other people were asking me is, are you going to write a book on our church? Are you going to write a book on these churches? And as I have continued to be there, and as I've been trying, and as I've been learning all the things that I don't know and realizing how much more I don't know, I've realized that a fair and balanced understanding of this particular phenomenon really has to end up coming through the mouths of these people themselves. And so, basically, really, I've decided not to try to write a book about these churches, even though I feel like I've learned quite a bit. I don't really consider myself to be an expert, and I don't really consider myself to really understand the churches. I've had a fair amount of experience with them, but I think we're going to have to wait probably for another 10 or 15 years before members of these churches are able to write about and explain their own experience. At the school where I'm working, we did ask a few of our students to write a history of their own church. And I'm going to introduce this session by reading a few of those essays that were given to us. Okay, most of the students at the school where we are mature adults. For example, the first person who wrote is a man, I would say probably about 40 years old. He has two wives, several children. And several of you asked, what is the language of Ghana? And I've mentioned also that the national language of Ghana is English. That is not the language that most people learn at home as they're growing up, but it's widely used, it's very much used in the city, and it's necessarily used for such things as television, radio, politics, education, and in many instances, church. However, in a lot of these churches, you go through a service where the events and the sermons are translated into two or three different languages in one service. So sometimes you'll find that maybe the English isn't so good in some of these. I'll try to read them as is. They are mature people, and it's probably a second or third language that they're writing in. Okay, so maybe I'll just start right out. Okay, the first one is about the Mesama Disco Cristo Church. The student writing it is a pastor of that church, Adio Kwanza. And here's what he says about the Mesama Disco Cristo Church. The word church means an assembly of persons gathered for a purpose or to make it more meaningful, a community of believers in an area. My church with the name Mesama Disco Cristo Church was established in the year 1922 and registered in 1952. The founder, Prophet Jemisimilian Jehuapia, of blessed memory, an early Methodist catechist stationed at Amwadunkwa in the Apam Circuit, was wondering or eager to see the power of God not moving to suit the limelight of the gospel. He started searching by praying fervently and fasting protractedly, pursuing for heavenly bliss to get the Spirit moving then to... Thought I had worked through this so I understood all the words. Moving then to stir in the ground. By so doing, he was changed to a new man by the Holy Spirit, and he started working miracles in healing and effective preaching, converting souls for his master. This led to his dismissal from the Methodist Church by the late Reverend Akwa, the then supervising priest in charge of Apam Circuit. With some few followers, like Brother Yangson, Sister Mary Tokum, Sister Hannah Barnes, and others, the Faith Society was established. His wife left him because she termed her husband as a madman. He chose among the followers a woman for a wife. Through her prophecies, the church has spread to this day. Her former name, Hannah Barnes, was changed to Nathalamamwa Jehu Apia through spiritual inquiries, and the leader, also William Apia, to Jemimimsilim Jehu Apia. This sort of inquiries was practiced to this day by the order of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit directed also that every next of kin should be the firstborn male of the leader. Now, I'll translate that a little bit. What that means is the succession of leaders would be the firstborn male of the previous leader. That is also practiced until this day. The church partakes more activities. The highest of all is the Peace Festival. This festival commemorates the birth of the promised next of kin to the founder who was supposed to be the leader of the church. This next of kin was called Moses with the heavenly name Melathabi, Moses Jehu Apia of blessed memory. All these prophecies came through the mother, showing the time and place of birth and conception. This story and work made us know that he was really leader of a church. That was a little bit confusing. Maybe I'll explain what he was really intending to mean. Apparently, the mother of, this chosen wife of the original founder and leader of the church prophesied in advance about the conception and the birth the exact date of birth of her son, who was then to become the next leader of the church. We are now actually in the third generation of that family and the church. Okay. This festival, the Peace Festival, starts from the 24th of August, the birthday of Moses, to the 7th of September each year. It is this period that every ardent member comes to Mozano, the citadel or the headquarters, to enjoy the rich blessings of God. We meet at prayers with one common destiny in church, in Christ, pointing to one common goal. Besides, the church has the consecrated workers refreshers meetings, the lay elders meeting all in May, Feast of Peace Offering in July, and the Believer's Day in September. The senior prophet, the senior pastor, and the lay president are the next to the leader. The church has the general secretary, the administrative secretary, and the treasurer. The church has also assistant senior pastors and prophets, supervising prophets and pastors, deacons, healers, and catechists, elders, and leaders, all under the supervision of the senior prophet, the senior pastor, and the lay president. The church has choristers, youth organizations, women's fellowships, singing bands, etc., which make the church very harmonious. The church has a laid-down principle of teaching and practices pertaining to Christ. The church fights against Jujuism, Spiritism, spiritualism, etc., and teaches repentance, baptism by immersion, Sabbath, resurrection, hell and heaven, etc. The church forbids entering the temple with dead bodies and sandals. And then it says something, I can't quite read this. The next one is, recite the Angelus. And I'm not exactly sure what that means. The church heals as it is taught in the Bible, divine healing, organizes open-air preaching camps and revival meetings, and evangelism of all types are practiced. So this is Adio Quantz's history of the Mesama Disco Cristo Church. I expect that as I read these, some of you might have questions about something or another, or maybe something that I say might pique your curiosity. I would like at any point to invite questions, and I expect to be led through your questions, you know, throughout this session.
I was just going to suggest the Angelus might come from the Anglican influence.
Okay, that's very possible, but I don't understand why he says you can't do that in the temple.
He says you can't do the Angelus.
Yeah, the church forbids entering the temple with dead bodies and sandals, recite the Angelus, etc.
So you can't do that.
So maybe you can't do it in their church.
Maybe it's a way of disassociating with.
Except they broke off the Methodist Church, which probably had already dissociated itself from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one doctrinal point, it was just that one little word on their doctrine, son of the priesthood, it wasn't very much on their beliefs.
No. Okay. Okay, that's a little bit shortchanging the Mesama Disco Cristo Church, because, in fact, of all these churches, they have worked out doctrine almost more than any of the others have. They have a fairly long church constitution with all sorts of points of doctrine and so forth. But the point of a little bit short on doctrine very much characterizes these churches. Sometimes I wonder if even they know what they believe.
It sounds like what brings them together is just lots of good groups.
Okay, the churches do have quite a bit of groups.
What's the problem with sandals? Do you have to be shoes or bare feet? Or?
Okay.
Is your?
Yeah. And when you're entering holy ground, you don't go in with your shoes on.
Oh.
And the theological justification for that goes back to Genesis with Moses in the burning bush. Possibly somebody else might look at it as in the traditional religions, a person is not allowed to go into the fetish priest's house with his shoes on. And actually, I think this is probably a carryover of that particular tradition that is not practiced in the major mainline churches, but is practiced in quite a few of the independent churches.
The removing the sandals.
Yes. And so I would say that, for example, almost because of the particular work that I'm doing, I'm visiting the different churches of this type constantly, and I would say about two-thirds of the Sundays I don't wear shoes in church.
How about, is there an Islamic influence there?
Okay, Islam is more predominant in the north, but in general, Islam does not have a lot of influence on Ghana. For those of you who weren't here yesterday, I'll mention a little bit about the general church scene in Ghana. Christianity was first introduced to Ghana in the year 1417 through the form of Portuguese traders. However, it really didn't start, it was not effectively promoted through the trading activities. And the first concerted acceptance of Christianity in Ghana began in about the year 1828. With the, which group was that? With the Basel mission, okay? Shortly following that, there were mission activities of several other churches and presently that missionary activity has resulted in a rather strong Catholic church, and on the Protestant side, Anglican, Methodist, and then Presbyterian and Evangelical Presbyterian churches. I need to, for the sake of you who weren't here yesterday, explain the Presbyterian and Evangelical Presbyterian churches a little bit. The present Presbyterian church has its historical roots in the work of the Basel Mission Society. But during the two world wars, Germans were suspect in a British colony, the then Gold Coast, and were expelled. And the Scottish Presbyterians were invited in to take care of the work that was left. After the First World War, the Germans came back, but then after the Second World War, the Presbyterians stayed, and the church now remains a Presbyterian church, even though it still has connections with the Basel Mission Society. For example, for a few years while they were there, we came to be fairly good friends with a German pastor who was working in the Presbyterian Church in Ghana under the auspices of the Basel Mission Society. The Evangelical Presbyterian Church is the result of the work of the Bremen Mission Society, and among the Aves in eastern Ghana and Togo. Okay, Togo was originally a German colony, and that's one reason why you would have some German influence there. And anyway, that church then came to be known earlier as the Ave Presbyterian Church, and now is called the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, because it's not exclusively among that one particular tribe. Okay, those churches are the major churches in Ghana, and I think I have, no, I guess this doesn't give percentages, but in southern Ghana, well, as far as the overall total population of Ghana, the estimate that probably around 50% of the Ghanaians consider themselves to be Christians, you know, one particular group or another. And in the southern part of Ghana, that is especially pronounced. For example, in the capital city of Accra, you'd be quite amazed on a Sunday as to how many people are in church. I would say probably about 65% of the city is in some church or another. you know, worshiping. Okay.
That's a lot better than England.
Yeah.
Well, and from what I just...
about 10%
from what I understand, it's the same thing in well, I a couple of years ago, I visited a church in Tipton, Iowa, you know, center Midwest USA. And the pastor there estimated about 25% of the town was in church. You know, you could say in the stronghold of Christianity.
The pastor was fighting Zuzus or...
Jujuism.
What's that?
Okay. Then I will move over to that. Because I knew when I started talking about all of this, I needed to talk a little bit about the traditional religion of Ghana. Because the traditional religion, of course, has had a lot of influence and impact upon these particular churches. Part of the criticism of the mainline churches is that they sort of imported Christianity from Europe and then later from the United States in certain groups such as Assemblies of God, African Methodist Episcopal Church, Seventh-day Adventist. Okay, those are some of the church, some of the more, well, not all of them would fit under that. Some of the less major churches, I'll put it that way, in Ghana. But all of those particular groups have had their influence. There is also quite a strong influence by Pentecostal type churches in Ghana. But the mainline churches often were accused of being somewhat insensitive to the traditions of the people and the traditional religion. In terms of stance with and toward the traditional religion, I find that the members of these independent churches are usually more antagonistic than the members of the mainline churches. But I also find that it's a curious mixture where the members of the independent churches have taken on a lot more forms of the tradition and the traditional religions than the mainline churches. Let me explain this a little bit. Okay, when the mainline churches started gaining importance in Ghana, for example, the Presbyterian Church or the Methodist Church, the practice of drumming was forbidden in the churches. Okay, drumming is an extremely important cultural phenomenon in all of West Africa. The rationale behind the drumming comes from the fact that in the traditional religion, there was not a very distinct separation between one's religion and the rest of one's life. Everything that one did from birth to death was somehow religious. And so when one got together for a party, it wasn't just a party as we would often have, but it would be a religious event. And your musical instruments aren't simply musical instruments made out of a factory or somewhere, but your musical instruments would be religious items. And for example, when a drum was traditionally made, one would not just go out and take a piece of wood and start making a drum, but one would first pour some offering to the spirit of the tree. And you would only use special trees for making that drum. And that spirit of the tree was known to live in the drum. And in a way, when the drum was playing, the spirit was speaking. So at the early part, in fact, contrary to what is often said, the missionaries were often more receptive to bringing in a lot of these cultural things, partly because they didn't understand them, than the newly converted Christians. And in the mainline churches in Ghana, for example, the Methodist Church just celebrated its 120th anniversary. Are any of you from Minneapolis, that area? Maybe that whole group is left. But probably not many of your churches in the United States here have celebrated their 120th anniversary, unless you're somewhere more on the eastern coast. You know, so these are churches that have had a long history in the country. Over the last 100 years, the accepted piece of music in the Methodist and the Presbyterian Church has been the organ. And probably primarily because it was an imported instrument, and there weren't special connotations with that, other than the connotations that this is what the missionary had brought, and so was the proper instrument for this religion. But even now, in Ghana today, in those churches, there are heavy debates going on whether or not to use drums in worship. And I would say that it's moving over now that the drum is becoming much, much more accepted. Okay, in the independent churches, it's been a little bit different, because from the very beginning, most of them have unquestioningly used drums, and they have dancing in their services and so forth. In fact, maybe I'll just mention something, draw a picture. It's interesting when you go into a church, because their church architecture is a little bit different than what we are normally associated with. At the front, they usually have an altar, and the leader or founder of the church would sit behind the altar, usually, along with, on each side, maybe on this side would be the elders, or the elders and the patron of the church. On this side might be the matron of the church, and I don't know if they have a special name, but the influential women. Then you would have maybe here the choir, over here the singing band. Then back here would come a few benches for, Here you'd have some benches for the Army of Jesus. Here you'd have some benches for the Women's Praying Band. Here, then there would be a few benches in the back, and then some benches for certain other groups. But the major part of the church building would be empty. And we soon found out why. They need a lot of room for their services. Because during part of the service, when they start doing what they call shouts, which are local songs, sometimes in English, sometimes in the vernacular languages, they're very short songs. You know, it's not long. Like one of them is a phrase that says, "Jesus loves me." And it is repeated over and over and over and over again. And you're singing these, and the singing is accompanied by clapping, usually. Then you start getting some rhythm going, and your feet start moving. And then often one of the leaders then in one of the groups will then start move from the place where they are and start. The dances aren't individual dances usually, but we'll start then dancing, you know, through around in a circle in this area, and the other members of that particular group then will follow, and it will form a circle that is dancing. So that's the point in the church architecture, why it is that way. What got me onto that?
Juju.
Okay, and I was talking about drums and the dancing and so forth. Okay, when one looks at Ghanaian culture and Ghanaian way of life, you are finding that the people are always singing and dancing, you know, in their own homes, in their own communities. There are a lot of different festivals where singing and dancing is involved. You don't find that so much in the mainline churches, but people who did not know or were not so influenced by other outside influences just
did it without thinking. Also, I mentioned that the person who wrote this had two wives. The question of polygamy. Okay, in the mainline churches, polygamy has not been tolerated for the whole time. And for example, in the Catholic Church, that is grounds for refusing partaking in the Eucharist. And polygamy is a very widespread part of the traditional Ghanaian culture. Right now, it's undergoing a lot of criticism and reflection. In this particular church, the Massama Disco Cristo Church, they permitted it, partially, I think, because the leader himself was polygamous, and that may have been one of the reasons for the split from the Methodist Church. They have worked up their own theological justification for it. In fact, the leader of the church, one time when I saw him last November, he had just returned from a conference in the United States in which he was presenting the views of his church on polygamy. However, one time in a private conversation with him, I was talking about him. He happens to have only one wife. He comes from a family with several wives. And he says that even though polygamy is officially accepted in his church, he's hoping that after a while it won't be permitted any longer. That's his own personal view. However, a lot of the older people are against that. Okay, the traditional religion, and I'm really getting to it. Okay, I could say in general, Africans believe in God. And the basic idea is, in a way you could say a monotheistic idea of God. There is one all-powerful, omniscient God who created all of us. And this God, this God at one time was very close to all of us. There is a Ghanaian story that says, that explains why God doesn't seem as close as he used to be. one day, God was living close to us, but there were women who were pounding their fufu. Those of you who saw the presentation on fufu and kente know what I mean. But it's a practice that one of their major foods that they like very, very much needs to be pounded with a big mortar and pestle. And so the woman was pounding her fufu and kept hitting God as the stick went up. And God was sort of uncomfortable with that, so he asked the woman, not to hit him any longer. But she liked her fufu too much and just kept making her fufu, and so God moved further away. And that's why God is less accessible today. And the Ghanaians feel that God is very important and presently active in events. However, there's that distance because of this unfortunate obstinacy of one of the ancestors. Right. and so there are a lot of expressions in the Ghanaian language, and Ghanaians are constantly calling on God. One of the very, very well-known symbols is one that means accept God. If God won't permit it, then it can't happen. God is the one who makes things happen. And when
God willing,
I think it's more pervasive than that. Even nothing can happen without God. Where yeah. More that. So God is very much in the Ghanaian mind. However, there isn't, a Ghanaian can pray to God as such, but there isn't a real close exchange between the ordinary Ghanaian and God. But what more immediately influences one's life in the traditional religion are the spirits, or sometimes called the lesser deities, and the ancestors. And I'll explain a little bit about both of those. Okay, the spirits are spirits which have never been human or, you know, taken on human form. They belong to the spiritual world. They are seen to reside in such things as trees, rivers, the earth, and so forth. The spirits are under God and are God's agents in the world. Those agents are also somewhat independent of God. So God can tell them to do this or that, and they may do it or they may not. Or if the spirit gets sidetracked on the way to do something, you know, he may do something else that may end up with a bad effect. Okay, the spirits are, and usually every spirit has a priest or a priestess who is especially attached to that spirit, is supposed to be able to speak the language of the spirit and interact with the spirit and divine, you know, how events are going with that. So that's one of the things that will influence the world spiritually in the traditional religion. Another thing that influences the world is one's ancestors. Ghanaians who have been acquainted with Europe try to say that the veneration of the ancestors in the Ghanaian traditional religion might be somewhat similar to the Roman Catholic veneration of the saints. There are similarities and there are differences. They make a big point in saying that the ancestors are not considered to be deity and they are not to be worshipped. However, the ancestor, that is a person who has died and moved on to another land, and a translation of the word is a land of ghosts.
Ghosts?
Or ghosts.
Ghosts.
Yeah, a land of ghosts. Can still influence what's happening now. And so if, for example, your father died or your grandfather died and you do not continue to pay adequate respect, your father or your grandfather may come back and cause you a few problems in life right now. So there is a lot of veneration and respect of the ancestors. One of the things in most religious events and most secular events, okay, any of you who saw that first slide series on Khufu and Kente, in the Durbar, I talked about pouring libation. Okay, it's, one has a calabash, small calabash with some brandy or schnapps in it, and at the beginning of an event, one will pour a little bit of that onto the ground and then call on the ancestors, various names of various ancestors, to come and to be present, to drink the libation and to enjoy the event as well as know that they are being remembered.
Well, this would be really familial or tribal, wouldn't it, in which you wouldn't have general ancestors.
You don't have general ancestors.
Yeah, right. You have, so this is really in family line.
Very much so. As I guess you could say everything in Ghana is.
No, but that's certainly not like this.
Yeah, well, in fact, that's one place where they have drawn the distinction.
Yeah.
It's because, okay, you don't have, in fact, I was just reading it in a book, somebody said, okay, you will have a Christian saint, but you will not have, and they don't have a name for their traditional religion because it's not one whole traditional religion. But you don't have an, you could say, an Akan ancestor. It's one's personal ancestors. Okay? And that's one of the things that makes the tribal system so strong in Ghana and even throughout much of Africa, is because one is concerned not about one's country, but about one's family and one's ancestors, present family as well as past family and future family. Because you want to live a good life so that your offspring, and you want to have a lot of offspring to venerate you so that you'll have a good life in the afterlife too, you know, so that you won't be neglected. So we have God who has somehow removed himself, and then the lesser deities and the ancestors. The ancestors don't so much have priests or priestesses devoted to them, but the head person in any particular family is responsible to keep up the veneration and to make sure that the ancestors are happy with you. Okay, so what happens with all of this is that every Ghanaian, and even the absolutely most sophisticated westernized Ghanaians that I have ever met, have deep down inside them very firmly some kind of belief in the spirit world, in spirit, and in influences of the spirit world on their particular life. I have been somewhat surprised that at different expressions that come out at different times. It's an experience different than I think most of us have ever had. But they feel very deeply in the influence of the spirit world in the various life. Now, one source that I was looking at mentioned that I'll get to that a little bit later. This spirit world, as I said, it affects human life. And you can be called, if somebody doesn't like you and wants to curse you, one can go to a fetish priest and have a curse put on you. And if that curse is put on you, depending on what kind of a curse it is, could lead to your death by accident or something, which is a terrible, terrible thing. Because then you are not even considered. If you die by accident, for example, you aren't able to become an ancestor. You just become a nothing, which in Ghanaian society is absolutely unthinkable. It's the same as if you died by suicide or died a criminal death or something like that.
How about
war? It depends on what you were doing in the war. If you were fleeing, if you were running away, you're nothing. But if you were in courageous combat, then in fact that put you up on a very special high place in the ancestors.
If you just get, by a truck or something, that's too bad. But
You see, the reason you were hit by the truck, I mean, it wasn't just an accident in the understanding, but you had committed some evil, some sin that nobody knew about. And then the divine powers, God or whatever, in promoting his justice.
Gotcha.
And this is one reason why suicide is also so bad, is because if you commit suicide, that means that you did something that you, it's about to be found out. And so you wanted to, you killed yourself to keep it from being found out. Therefore, the assumption is that it really must have been something very, very bad. And
is it very high suicide?
There's almost no suicide in God. Almost no suicide.
What about illness?
Okay.
If you
die from a normal illness, there are certain illnesses that are somewhat taboo. For example, smallpox is one, leprosy is another, which would have bad effects. But if you buy, you know, die from something normal like pneumonia or whatever, that's considered to be a respectable kind of death. Whatever. So, and you'll find that actually the most important event in Ghana is funerals. People spend probably, for a funeral of somebody in your family, you can get off several days of work, and I would say that some workers in Ghana spend about one third of their time off work at funerals.
What's the life expectancy on the project?
It's pretty low. It's been rising. It's been rising. Some people live very, very old. I met a person who was over 100 years old. But when they start getting that old, then it's hard to tell how old they are because they can't tell exactly when they were born because people weren't paying too much attention back then as to that. But I've met, there are quite a few quite old people. However, there earlier has been a lot of child birth. What do you call that?
Infant mortality.
And but then through modern medicine, that has been reduced. There hasn't been a whole lot in the way of birth control, and there is a lot of pressure from this thing dealing with the ancestors to have a lot of children to respect you in your old age and beyond. And so if a woman is not able to bear a child within 2 years of marriage, she is liable for divorce, and that's grounds for divorce. And a family with less than four children is considered to be an inadequate family. So what this lessened infant mortality is doing, and keeping on birth rate, in fact, it's going to have a devastating effect on the country. Also, already in the last 10 years, the country has gone from 8 million to 10 million, and they anticipate that it will be around 20 million by the year 2000. And basically in Ghana, there are a few national programs that are somewhat working on it, but it's so, the idea of somehow controlling that is so entirely against the tradition that there's practically no effort at controlling it and facing, the consequences of it.
Yeah, it sounds like Christianization hasn't really changed the basic ancestor concept.
Well, okay, what I said about this belief and feeling in spirit,
mm-hmm.
There is definitely, even among the Christians and those who have been families, well, how many generations would it be if your parents had been Methodist for 120 years, maybe three generations? There is still a lot of that traditional understanding, even among the Christians. There are a lot of the Christians who will both attend church and also every once in a while go to the shrines. Now, there is quite a bit of that. Of course, the church disapproves of it and tries to discourage it, but I don't think it's, had a whole lot of impact on that. Now, okay, yeah.
In your first presentation, you showed us a slide of, I think it was a chief, educated.
Yeah.
This is not a Christian, this one.
That's right. Okay, we don't know his personal feelings. However, this man is an expert tribal traditional healer. He knows a lot about the traditional herbs and for healing and so forth. And he he also, by virtue of his office, is the primary one in his tribe responsible for the ancestor veneration. You know, that, you can't be chief and neglect that, otherwise you're neglecting your whole tribe, okay? Now, it's interesting because in his address to that particular group that we showed, he was saying that he hoped that over time Christianity would overcome all of this.
Is there a great deal of hunger?
Pardon?
Is there hunger now?
Okay, that's a little bit different in topic, right?
You know, they're increasing that rapidly. There's going to be a real problem.
Yeah. Oh, very much so. There have been a lot of other issues that have brought along some hunger in the last few years. However, for the last couple of years, we've had sufficient rains, and the country has stabilized a little bit politically and economically. And I wouldn't say there would be much hunger there. But, so, anyway, I'm trying to get back to the independent churches from this whole thing with the traditional religion.
Now that's called the Juju?
No, not at all.
No.
Okay, and Juju would then, what he referred to as Juju, would then be the efforts by the fetish priests or priestesses to to overcome evil influences that had been put on you because of a displeased ancestor, because of the misactions of one of the minor gods, or because of somebody's hate of you who had then employed another fetish priest or priestess to put a curse on you. Okay. And so Juju is that action of overcoming these particular spells. And then they would be tied with certain sacrifices and rituals that would, according to the priests and priestesses, have been revealed by the god that they were serving, and so forth.
Did Jesus apply rejecting the whole belief in those spells, or just rejecting practices?
Okay. And this is where I think the independent churches become especially interesting. Okay, the independent churches almost completely, in principle, reject the traditional religion. They reject the fetish priest and say, they don't say, as we in Europe or the United States might say, that they are, you know, sham, ineffective. They would say that is the work of the devil more. They don't say that they are ineffective. In fact, they firmly believe that they are effective. With the independent churches, what they usually say is, yes, there is this spiritual world that does affect us. However, there is a power that is greater than all of these other ones, and that's the power of the Holy Spirit. And that's why I think they call themselves spiritual churches.
It would be very much like the sense of early Christianity to the pagan religion. I mean, it wasn't that those spirits, gods, were real, but they were demons.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Christ had delivered you from the power of them.
Mm-hmm. And so one finds the use of calling the name of Christ to be